Welcome to the Gaming Legacy Podcast. I'm Roger Gross, the editor-at-large for Global Gaming Business Magazine. I'm here with what people would call the father of gaming in New Jersey. At least, I guess we have to give Governor Byrne a little bit of credit there as well. But Steve Persky wrote the law, wrote much of the legislation for gaming in New Jersey, and really launched gaming all across the country, not just New Jersey. When the riverboat states started coming in, people came to New Jersey to get advice on how to start gaming, and you really played a huge role in that.
I was very, very flattered and very pleased a couple of years ago to be recognized by the American Gaming Conference and to be included in their Hall of Fame.
Yes, and very rightly so. I was very pleased to see that as well. So I was on that board for a while, and your name floated through a couple of times, but I'm glad it finally got up there. So congratulations on
that.
Thank
you. Thank you.
So let's start at the beginning. Atlantic City in the 60s and 70s was struggling, especially after the Democrat National Convention in 1964, turned the nation's attention on how bad it was in Atlantic City. Tell us how these ideas came about to revitalize the city, and why casinos ended up being the idea that you chose.
Well, that's exactly the right starting point, Roger. The 64 convention in Atlantic City was politically a non-entity in the sense that nothing
right.
magic happening. So all of the people from all over the country, instead of paying all that attention to what was going on at the convention, paid attention to what was going on in Atlantic City, and that was an unmitigated disaster
for
a lot of different reasons. And the national press certainly picked up on that. So that started an exercise by the local chamber of commerce, by the business association, by the hotels, by the state government. What can we do about Atlantic City? And there were no silver bullets. There was no magic answer. One of the suggestions that came about around a couple of years later, 67, 68, was the idea of gaming casinos in Atlantic City. Now, again, let's talk about 1968, for example, just as a time, 68, 69. That was a time when the only authorized gaming in the United States was in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, history had been mixed. There was a whole lot of ugliness in terms of some of the operators there. You've seen the movies.
And
that's right. And the casino industry, as a general matter, was considered by Main Street, let's say, to be untrustworthy and unreliable. That's point one. Then you have the state of New Jersey. In 1968 or 69, the United States Attorney for the state of New Jersey came out with a public statement, mind you, that many of the members of the political structure in New Jersey were, and I'm quoting now, entirely too close to organized crime. And when he said that, he listed the names of a half a dozen different political figures, one of whom was the political leader of Atlanta County, Senator Farley. So you have an industry that is considered to be dirty, thinking about coming into a state the political leadership of which has been tarred by the United States Attorney. And then you have Atlantic City. By 1969 or 70, three former mayors, or the present mayor and former mayors of Atlantic City, had been indicted and gone to jail.
Hmm.
So when you come into the early 70s, you have an industry that is not trusted on Main Street, or Wall Street, for that matter. You have a state and a city that are considered to be less than clean.
Right.
That's the environment in which, as a matter of desperation, in 1971, when I ran for the first time, my running mates and I floated the idea of casinos in Atlantic City. It was considered at the time to be a kind of a ridiculous concept for all of the reasons that I've just indicated. You couldn't get financing because Wall Street and the lenders and around the country were very reluctant to be seen to be doing business with people that the public couldn't trust. The governor of New Jersey at the time, William Cahill, a terrific man, but nevertheless a absolute firm opponent of any concept of gaming. In New Jersey, the political system is that a governor, whoever the governor is, cannot always get what he or she wants, but does have, everybody has, every governor has in New Jersey, the power to stop what they don't want.
Right.
So the idea of casinos in New Jersey was DOA, dead on arrival, with KU.
Right.
1973, as a result of things that were going on in Washington, with Watergate, and a whole lot of other stuff, the political environment in New Jersey went complete upside down. Mm-hmm. Governor Byrne was elected. Democrats took over the legislature. Now, all of a sudden, we have a shot.
Right.
And we didn't do it very... We put a question on the ballot in 1974. By the way, I should mention for your listeners that in New Jersey, there's a constitutional prohibition on any form of gaming. So if you're going to try to license any form of gaming in New Jersey, you first have to amend the Constitution to get it permitted, or pass a special law that still has to go on a referendum. The people of New Jersey have to vote for it. And that requires a three-fifths majority of the legislature to put the question on the ballot, and then it requires a campaign to pass the question. In 1974, we put a question on the ballot that was predestined to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that so? Well, we introduced a bill for Atlantic City, and we needed to get 60% of the votes in the Assembly and 60% of the votes in the Senate to put the question on the ballot. We had the 60% of the votes in the Assembly to put the question on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't get the votes of 60% of the senators because enough of them were perfectly happy to vote for a proposal for gaming, but not to be limited to Atlantic City.
Right.
They wanted it anywhere in the state, which the governor, Governor Byrne, was opposed to.
Mm, right.
So we compromised and put a question on the ballot that said that if the voters of any given county and municipality voted for it, then the legislature would be allowed to do it. The governor at the same time made a public statement that he would veto any legislation that didn't come, it wasn't limited to Atlantic City. So as a result, there was no political cohesion, there was no concerted effort. We didn't have enough sense at that time in Atlantic City to think about how we wanted to pass that, that we would need an organized political effort throughout the state. We would need to reach out to the political parties. We would need to reach out to the leadership of labor and business. We didn't even have, none of it got thought through.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as a result, in 1974, the proposed constitutional amendment was voted down by about a 60-40%.
Right.
That left us, of course, as far as Atlantic City was concerned, in desperate straits. We had nothing to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that came up was the idea of maybe using Atlantic City as a headquarters for offshore oil drilling.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a delegation from the Chamber of Commerce, which I joined at that point for the trip, and we went down to New Orleans to inspect what was going on in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and to see whether that could work in Atlantic City. It could not. So in 1975, when I was up for re-election, as a matter of pure desperation, in the campaign in the fall of 75, I threw out the notion that we would try it again, but this time we would do it differently. This time it would be limited to Atlantic City. This time it would be privately owned and operated casinos,
right,
as opposed to the public.
Mm-hmm.
In 1974, the proposal was to have the casinos owned and operated by the state of New Jersey.
Right.
Nobody liked that idea.
And rightly so.
So we made a number of changes to the proposal. One of the changes also, we had done some polling after the 74 defeat, and we found that the overwhelming majority of the no votes came from senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So because we had enough political sense to do it, among the changes that we made from 74 to 76, we put a proposal in that the revenues, the state's revenues from taxing the casinos, would be first applied to for the benefit of programs that benefited senior citizens. Senior citizens' property tax reduction, senior citizens' medical assistance, and put something in there that made the senior citizens, made it a little more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did what, in my view then and today, all these years later, was the single smartest thing that we did in the whole effort.
Mm-hmm.
We recognized in 76 that we had done a terribly poor job of organizing and campaigning throughout the state.
Right.
So when the legislature accepted our, and Governor Byrne, by the way, was very much out front in favor of the 76 proposal.
Right.
When the legislature put it on the ballot in May, I guess, of 76, to go on the ballot in November, we sat down in Atlantic City and organized a group that became known as the CRAC
Committee.
CRAC.
Right.
The Committee to Rebuild Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
That committee, which was chaired by the mayor of Atlantic City, consisted of political figures, the legislators, the mayor of Atlantic City, the city commissioners in Atlantic City, the business leadership, the hotel leadership, labor, all of the interests, if you will, that had a stake in Atlantic City joined together. Now, some of the people in that room were diehard political enemies of each other.
Right.
Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Because we sat down in June and organized the committee, and we said to each other, look, this is our last shot. Everybody's got to be on his or her best behavior. There can be no political infighting. Whether you like me or not, once we come up with an idea, everybody's going to sign on to it and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
We had a local businessman, an insurance guy, who was simply terrific at it, in charge of raising the money. We decided at the beginning of the effort that we might need to raise $1 million. We weren't sure we could do it.
Right.
We came close to raising almost $2 million,
mm-hmm,
for that effort. We organized a speakers bureau. One of the things that we had done wrong in 74 was anybody who wanted to would go to the Lions Club in Monmouth County, or to the Rotary Club in Essex, or to the Council of Churches over here, and they would say whatever they wanted to say,
right,
about why people should vote for this.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that we were giving inconsistent messages.
Right.
So I organized a speakers bureau. I wrote out a series of this is what you want to say, and this is the,
yeah,
script,
mm-hmm,
and you're going to stick to the script whether you like it or not.
Right.
And everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the magic. Again, it's hard to imagine now, but this is what happened. I was sent sometime, I think, in about August. I was sent up to a club, I don't forget which one, up in Monmouth County, to make the case. And there was a big crowd there. It was generally, I would say, middle-aged and older, people starting in their 40s and 50s and,
sure,
and going up. And I was making the case, and I'm looking around the room, and I had by that time enough political experience to know when I'm looking at an audience whether I'm making an indent or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that I was getting nowhere.
Right.
I could see that they were listening to me, but my message was not selling.
Right.
Because I was kept talking about Atlantic City. And then, if you believe in a God in heaven, something happened. And I literally stopped in the middle of a sentence because a thought occurred to me. And I said, excuse me a minute. Let me ask, show of hands, please. How many of you have ever been to Atlantic City? Every hand in the room went up.
Right.
Second question. How many of you have been to Atlantic City in the last 10 years? Maybe 10%.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Aha! So I got in my car. We didn't have cell phones in those,
right,
days. Got in my car, drove back home, and sat down with Sandy Weiner, who had been appointed as the executive director of the CRAC effort.
Right.
Told him the story, and I said, we have to tell people what's going on in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
We have to show them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, this was 50 years ago. There was none of the technology,
right,
we have today.
Right. No social media back then.
No social media. not even videos,
right,
but we took a lot of pictures, we had slides, we had data, and now all of a sudden the message was, this is what Atlantic City was,
mm-hmm,
but this is what has happened,
right,
and this is why we need casino investments to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the message that eventually resonated throughout the state.
Right.
And over the course of the 76 campaign, we went all over the state. All over the state, and we went to every county. We sat down with the Republican leaderships. We sat down with the Democratic leaderships. We sat down with labor unions and with religious groups.
Mm-hmm.
I was sent to meet with the Board of Rabbis and with the Council of Churches.
Right.
They didn't like what I was having to say, and they didn't agree with it, but, you know, it was a good exercise. And then I'll tell you one other story, because it has stuck in my head for all of these 50 years. Actually, it's 49, but I call it 50. The week before the election, I mean, we're all feeling pretty good about where we were going. The week before the election, Weiner calls me up and he says, "You got to go to Ocean City tomorrow. There's a convention there, and they want to have a debate between somebody from here and the chairman of the convention." I said, "What's the convention?" And he said, "The Women's Christian Temperance Union." Well, he says, "What's the difference?" He says, "We're not going to get one vote in that room anyway, right. So we got nothing to lose. I want you to go and make the debate." I said, "All right, I'll go." So I go down to Ocean City that day to the music pier on the boardwalk. And every time I have gone into the building ever since then, and I'm going to debate the chairman of the WCTU, who I hadn't been told, was the husband, I'm going to debate Reverend Jeans, whose wife was the chairman of the WCTU, okay. But he was the chairman of the anti-casino crusade.
Oh, great.
So I said, "Okay, what do I got to lose?" Right. I said, "We got no votes in this room, so don't worry about it." So I made my presentation, he made his presentation, and then they opened the floor for questions. And you had everything that I anticipated. You had everybody stand up and say how terrible it was, right. It's the religion or whatever. And then, and by the way, I was 31 years old. I was by a margin of more than 30 years the youngest person in the room.
Right, I'm sure.
There wasn't anybody in that room that looked like they had ever gone to an NAACP meeting, and there wasn't anybody in that room who looked like they'd ever gone to a synagogue. I mean, it was crazy. Anyway, in the middle of the room stands up a woman, small, demure, white hair, classic, what you would call respectfully a little old lady. And she stands up and she says, "I have never been to a casino. I don't like the idea of gaming. I did, but I love Atlantic City. I've been to Atlantic City all my life. I haven't been there recently, but I see what you're showing us in terms of what has happened to Atlantic City. And if this is what it takes to save the Atlantic City that I love, I will vote for this." And then around the room, there was a smattering of supportive applause. Right? 10%?
Yeah.
5%, 15%? Just enough they could be heard.
Yeah.
But again, no cell phones. So I jumped into my car as fast as I could, drove back to the headquarters, and I said, "Close it down. We've won this election. What are you talking about?" And I told them I told them the story. And that's, in fact, what happened. We sold Atlantic City in 1976. We didn't sell gaming.
Right. Okay. So you also had trouble selling it to some of the hotel owners because they thought they were just going to open and put a casino in their property and boom, they were off and running. But you wanted new construction. You wanted new investment.
Well, that's absolutely right. What happened there was, as I mentioned to you, we organized ourselves in June to get ready for the referendum. And one of the assignments that I was given, one of the things that happened in 74 was every time somebody asked a question, everybody had a different answer to the question.
Right. Yeah.
How are you going to do this? Well, this guy said this and that guy said that. So we're going to have one set of answers. Well, how do you do that? The way you do that is you write the law ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was given the responsibility in June of 76 to draft what would become the Casino Control Act.
Right.
And I spent June, July, August, and much of September putting it all together. And my cousin, who was a law clerk, helped me out. We did some research. We looked at what was happening in Nevada. We looked at what was happening in Europe. We looked at what was happening in all over.
Right.
And we took the best ideas from every place. But we put them in a program that met two criteria. Number one, that we would build a regulatory structure that was so tough and so strong that it would achieve the support of Wall Street and Main Street by saying that anybody that's going to be involved in casinos in Atlantic City, whether it's as an owner or an employee or a supplier or whatever, anybody that's going to touch this process is going to have to be clean, and the public's going to have to know that they're going to be clean. So we built in this draft of a regulatory system the strongest regulatory structure in the world at that time, which, by the way, in the years since then, has been copied all over the world.
Yeah.
The second element that we wanted, apart from the security, to satisfy Wall Street and Main Street that they're investment would be sound and secure and not influenced by any criminal activities. We also wanted to convey the message to the public in the referendum that we were about rebuilding Atlantic City. That meant new hotels, that meant better facilities, restaurants, cleaner boardwalk, everything about the infrastructure of the city and the commercial attractiveness of the city
right.
had to be built into this structure. Mm-hmm. So that meant that we wrote a bill that had minimum requirements for getting a casino license,
right.
such as, we looked around Atlantic City and the largest hotel in Atlantic City at that time had 410 rooms. Mm-hmm. So the first requirement we put in was you have to have 500 rooms.
Right.
Then we looked at the size of the hotel rooms. And we found that the largest hotel rooms were, I forget exactly how many feet, but whatever it was, we would a minimum increase that. So
sure.
everybody had a rebuild.
Right.
How much public space do you have for restaurants, nightclubs, and entertainment facilities? And we put minimum criteria in the statute for that.
Right.
And the whole purpose of that was to show the world that no hotel in Atlantic City was, as it then existed, mm-hmm.
would qualify.
Right. That everybody had to build up.
Sure.
Well, okay, now comes September, and it's time to go public with this proposed referendum.
Right.
So we had a meeting of the crack committee, which was consisting, among others, of all of the major hotel owners in Atlantic City who had put up the money
right.
to make all of this work.
Yeah, right.
And I was assigned the responsibility of explaining to them what we had done, mm-hmm. which I didn't object to.
Right.
So I sat there at the end of the long table, and there's 30 or so people in the room. And I walked them through what I've just walked you through. And as you might imagine, the reaction of the people at the table was disastrous.
Right.
How dare you? Who gives you the right to? There was profanity and there was anger. I'm not going to make any more contributions. It was awful. Mm. And it went on for a good while. Then at the other end of the table, a man that I had never actually met until that day. Mm-hmm. He's no longer with us, but he was a giant. His name was F. Fisher White. The White family owned at that time a couple of hotels in Atlantic City, had for many, many years. Mm-hmm. They were devout Quakers, very religious people, very straight people, very honest people, very good people. Mm-hmm. Fisher White listened to what everybody had to say, and he waited, and then he said, excuse me, I have something to say. And he stood up, and of course, everybody in the room respected him and knew him, so
sure.
he said, this isn't about me or my hotels. He said, if this referendum passes, we will sell our hotel, and we will leave Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. And I'm not completely thrilled about that, but that's the fact, because my family and I have no interest in being involved in a gaming operation. But this isn't about me, and this isn't about my hotel. This is about Atlantic City. And then he proceeded in 3 minutes to make the case I had been trying to make about why this was necessary to bring the city back to where everybody needed it to be. Mm-hmm. And if anybody had to make a sacrifice, such as I have to make a sacrifice, I have to sell my hotel even though I don't want to.
Right.
If I have to do that, that's what everybody in this room needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
End of discussion.
Right.
End of discussion. Mm-hmm. The people at the table never got to be happy, but they got to accept the necessity of doing what we had to do.
Right.
And when the referendum passed in November of 76, I took the bill that we had drafted, introduced it the next week, exactly in that form. One of the other things that we had done right, when we went public with that bill in September and promised the people of New Jersey that if they voted yes, this is what they were going to get.
Right.
That meant, and we knew that it meant, at least I knew that it meant, that afterwards, next year when we were busy passing the statute, we couldn't make any significant changes in it, any dilution in it at all, because we would be breaking the promise that we had made to the people.
Sure.
And so we locked in all of the concepts that I had mentioned.
Okay, great. So from the time the referendum passed in November of 76, to the opening of Resorts International, which is in May 31st, 1978.
Memorial Day.
It was 18 months, which is, today is still the shortest time of any state, any jurisdiction that passed gaming and got it open. How did you do that? I mean, that.
Well,
particularly since you weren't really copying Nevada.
No, absolutely not. We made major changes in Nevada, and we had I had talked during the process, and then again in 77 when we were doing when we were passing the bill, I had spoken to the regulators in Nevada because I didn't want them. I mean, we were telling the people of New Jersey that our structure is going to be very different from and much stronger, and it was, than that in Nevada. But we didn't want to make enemies of the regulators in Nevada because we knew that someday we would need to work with them. Yeah. So we had a good level of communication with them. And we told them why we were doing what we were doing. The bill went into the legislature. The new legislature met in January of 77 after the referendum. Mm-hmm. It took 6 months from January 77 to June of 77 for the legislature to pass the bill. And part of that, and you know, how did we do it? We did it because we had so many friends in good places. The governor of New Jersey was a major element of that.
Sure.
He appointed his attorney general, and he appointed a staff of people from the administration to work actively with us in terms of getting the bill through the legislature. The chairman of the most important committee in the assembly that had the bill, Assemblyman then Senator now, even all these years later, Richard Cody, took charge of the process of passing that bill. Now, I got to tell you, because it's amazed me then, it amazes me today. The bill was over 100 pages long.
Yeah.
Dick Cody and his committee held hearings on that bill every day for a couple of weeks, and every sentence in the bill was read out loud. Mm-hmm. Every sentence in the bill, 100 pages, was read out loud, and then they asked for comments from the committee, from the public, from the press, every sentence of the bill. We made a number of changes during that process, all of which were designed to upgrade, not to downgrade, what we had promised the people of New Jersey. The bill passed in June of 77. The governor showed up on the boardwalk. I have in the next room, I have a picture of the governor signing the bill on the boardwalk in Atlantic City on June 2nd, 1977. Mm-hmm. And then you have to start, okay, now you've passed the law, now you have to administer it.
Right.
So you first have to have a Casino Control Commission, and the Casino Control Commission has to be appointed, and then it has to adopt regulations, and then it has to receive applications, and then it has to investigate, and all of that business.
Right.
So the governor moved very quickly. He had the commission in place by the fall, September or October of 77. The commission organized itself under the first chairman, Joseph Lordi, who was spectacular.
Yeah.
They adopted their regulations within a few months. I would say the regulations at the commission were probably in place by January or February or March, let's say, of 78. And Resorts was the only application at that time, because they were ready. They had they had been preparing for it ahead of time. But there was a problem. The problem was that it was going to take 3 months, 4 months, 6 months to investigate Resorts' application. Mm-hmm. Everybody, the governor, the legislature, the industry, the business, everybody wanted the casinos open for the summer.
Right.
So how do you make that work? Well, so we put together an emergency bill. In April of 78, we passed an amendment, a one-time shot.
Right.
And it said that the commission would be allowed to authorize a temporary license if the applicant met a certain set of criteria. The license could be temporarily issued pending final licensure. And it would be revoked at the end of the process if, in fact, the licensee didn't qualify.
Right.
Governor signed that in May or so of 78, and on Memorial Day of 1978, resorts opened the first casino.
Yeah, no question. So that was also used for Caesars, for a lot of the early casinos, correct?
No.
Oh, no?
No, we didn't need it.
Okay.
For those others. Caesars applied, I forget exactly when, mm-hmm. but they applied with enough time
right.
to allow the regulatory process to work its way all the way through so that by the time they were ready to open, the regulators were ready to let them open.
Okay. That's right. There were some instances, though, where, for example, Caesars, the Pearlman brothers were not permitted to have ownership in Caesars
Correct.
At the time. And, you know, I've met them several times over my career, and they were pretty stunned about that.
Yes.
What was the background of that?
They fell into a hole that very few of us saw coming.
Mm-hmm.
There was no special problem, or no problem, forget special, with either of them.
Yeah.
They were good men, they were mm-hmm. good businessmen, they were honest, they were good family people. But they had been in business in other places,
mm-hmm.
not in Nevada,
right.
but in other places, with people that our regulators found didn't qualify.
Right.
For all the kinds of obvious reasons. The Pearlmans were not engaged in the illicit businesses with the people they were in business with, but
right.
they were in business with them in other things.
Sure.
So it was like bad associations.
Sure, right.
And those bad associations in the context of the image that New Jersey was trying to project, that we are going to be cleaner than clean.
Right.
Those bad associations sort of dirtied, if you will, the Pearlmans.
Right.
And the result of it was that they were required to withdraw from Caesars
mm-hmm.
in order to permit Caesars to continue the application, which
right.
they did, to yeah. their credit.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt badly about it in the sense that I had met the Pearlmans and I thought they were good people,
mm-hmm.
but I also understood that New Jersey couldn't compromise its standards.
Right.
If we were going to mean what we said and said what we meant, we had to hold to a very high standard.
Right. Well, I think another shock to the system was when the commission rejected Hilton as
yes.
And Hilton was a fine, upstanding hotel company.
Absolutely, and it was the same genre of things.
Right,
Hilton, in terms of running its own operation,
mm-hmm.
did not create a problem, but Hilton was in business with other people
right.
who were perceived to be problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, what happened as a result of all of that is that Hilton and a number of other companies did something very, very smart. Okay, because
mm-hmm.
they hadn't been required to do this
sure, right.
under Nevada's law,
mm-hmm.
but they now are required to do it if they want to do business in New Jersey
mm-hmm.
and elsewhere.
Right.
Because by that time, other states and other countries actually were looking at what New Jersey was doing and were going to copy it.
Right.
So Hilton and several other companies set up internally a special management process,
mm-hmm.
management committee. And the management committee was charged by the operator, by Hilton, with reviewing any deal that Hilton wanted to make with anybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To determine whether those people, if Hilton was doing business with them,
right.
would impair Hilton's ability to get a license anyplace.
Right.
And today, that's what's going on. Anytime a publicly traded company now wants to do business with the Roger Gross Company.
Right.
They have an internal committee that investigates Roger Gross
mm-hmm.
before they allow the bosses to do business with
sure,
them.
Sure, no question about that. So a few years after the casinos opened, it became apparent that they weren't really helping Atlantic City. In fact, a lot of businesses closed. They thought the streets were going to be paved with gold, and of course they weren't. And a lot of the casinos had the amenities that were offered outside. Was that some kind of thought when you were legalizing them that maybe you should have allowed or limited the number of amenities inside the casinos? Was there
no, not that. But again, as somebody once said years ago in a different context, the key to something is knowing what you don't know.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Knowing what you don't know.
Yeah.
What did we not know in 1976 and 1977 when we were putting all of this together?
Mm-hmm.
We did not know that allowing casino industry to come into the city and to do what we wanted it to do,
right,
to build these new facilities and to make them spectacular and to offer restaurants and nightclubs and entertainment, we did not think through or know to think through the impact that that would have on the existing business community in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Should we have? Yes. But again, it's a matter of learning what you don't know 50 years later. The mayor of Atlantic City just published an editorial in the New York newspapers on this exact subject, telling the people of New York, as they're looking to consider the question of casinos in New York, that you need to think this through. Casinos don't build cities.
Right.
That's the mayor's point. Mm. People build cities.
Right.
So what we learned through this process, and it took us a long time to learn it, was that after you bring the casinos into a community and their money and their employment and their attractiveness, the business leaders, the residents of the community, the labor leaders in the community, the political leaders in the community, all have to get together and say, okay, what are we going to do now about what's wrong with the city that the casinos have nothing to do with?
Right.
All that we ever wanted the casinos to do was to come in, invest a hell of a lot of money, and run clean operations.
Right.
They did that.
Mm-hmm.
They did that.
Yeah.
The obligation to rebuild the city, which is what we were all about, was not imposed on the casinos. It shouldn't have ever been, and it wasn't. It rather was imposed, or should have been imposed, on the political leadership, on the business leadership of the city, and for that matter, the state. Well, we fell short on that in Atlantic City for many years. The state fell short for even longer.
Right.
The state took a lead.
Mm.
But the leadership in Atlantic City, the political leadership, the business leadership, the residential leader, the chambers of commerce, the neighborhood associations, all failed to ask the right questions and come up with the right answers.
Right.
So the rebuilding of Atlantic City that we envisioned in the 1970s didn't really start to take place until the 2010s and now the 2020s.
Right.
We're doing, for the last 8-10 years, we're doing a terrific job of rebuilding Atlantic City in every material respect, but it should have been done many years earlier.
Right. Well, they tried by forming the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority.
Yes.
Questions with that says, well, I was riding through the inlet today and I was remembering, you know, how bad that was. And now they've got these nice townhouses down there and they've been there for 30 years now.
CRETA, as it's called, the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority, was the last, 1982 is when I left the legislature, and that was the last bill that I introduced.
Mm-hmm.
I introduced it in early 1982, then I left, and my successor in the Senate, Senator Gormley, ran with it and took it and ran it through and got it enacted into law, and it's still effective. The Casino Reinvestment Development Authority gets money from essentially a tax on the casinos.
Right.
And then
initial quarter percent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it spends that money primarily. One of the problems with the bill as it was passed is in order to get it passed, some of CRETA's money had to go around the state.
Yes.
But leaving that aside, the money that CRETA spends in Atlantic City is aimed at just that. It's aimed at infrastructure development. They did a hell of a lot, spent a hell of a lot of effort on rebuilding the boardwalk and paving the streets. They have done a very, very good job of attracting investment capital, new housing, as you've mentioned. That's been going on regularly, and CRETA has been an important part of that. CRETA has a task force that handles keeping the streets clean in the whole commercial section of the city, leaving the city to do it by itself in the residential sections. So CRETA has been an integral part of helping to rebuild the city.
Right, absolutely. So you mentioned that the state pulled back for a number of years, and I believe that was under the leadership of Tom Kane. I remember thinking at the time, we had a writer, Mark Reefer. I'm sure you remember Mark Reefer.
I do indeed.
Who insisted that Governor Kane said, we've legalized casino gaming and we're going to go burn in hell for it, but I'm not going to help them. You know?
Well, he didn't say it exactly that way, but I'll tell you what he did say, because, again, when you live this many years as I have and you have these memories, they never leave you. Tom Kane was a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into the legislature in 1972, he was already there. He was the Republican leader. I was a new Democrat. We could talk to each other. We did. We made a friendship that has lasted to this day. I think he was a good governor. I know he was a very good man. I like everything about him. In 1989, after his, as he was at the end of his tenure, in fact, he had, it was after the 89 election, he only had a few weeks left in office. At my request, I met with him in Newark because I was going to be coming in the next month as the chief of staff to the new governor, Governor Florio. Right. And I wanted to meet with Tom and talk with him and his chief of staff and just have a dialogue. And I was very careful not to mention anything specific about Atlantic City because I knew that it was, for his, as far as he was concerned, an ugly subject. Now, let me give you one other piece of background. By 1989, I had mentioned that in the 1970s, several prior mayors of Atlantic City had gotten into legal trouble.
Right.
Well, by 1989, two more had,
right.
Including the, in 1989, the incumbent mayor who was indicted
right.
and convicted.
Yeah.
So I didn't touch Atlantic City in this conversation, and at some point, Tom did. Somebody else asked him about it. And he looked over at me because, as I said, he and I were good friends.
Sure.
And it was almost as if he didn't use these words, but the look on his face said to me, "I have to apologize to you." That's not what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What he said, but that's what he meant.
Sure.
What he said was, "Look," he said, "when I came in," he said, "I was very worried about Atlantic City because of the history.
Mm-hmm.
And I therefore made a decision to keep as far away from it as I could. Because I never wanted to interfere with what was going on, but I never wanted to get involved, and I didn't want my government to get involved. And now look what has happened last month."
Mm-hmm.
And he said last month because the mayor was indicted.
Yeah.
He said, "So I made a decision to stay as far away from Atlantic City as I could." Now, and I didn't say a word to him then.
Yeah.
A couple of years later when we had lunch, we had a good conversation. But my response to that would have been, "You know what? I understand that, but that wasn't your job as governor."
Yeah.
"Your job as governor was to get heavily involved and make it happen."
Right.
Well, so in 1989, Florio was elected governor. I was the chief of staff. And in Florio's administration from 90 to 94, he did exactly what I had hoped Kane would have done.
He did an amazing job there.
Yes.
But I think it actually started with Tom Kane. Down through the years, he had appointed members of the Casino Control Commission who were...
He did a good job.
...nothing about gaming. They'd come in, they would just not know what they were voting on. But he did at the end of his term, he appointed Pat Dodd as a commissioner. And Pat immediately dove in to learn about gaming, and he was a great guy.
Pat and I had served together in the legislature,
right,
and
right.
I knew him very well. And then when I got to be chairman of the commission in 1990,
right.
he was still on the commission
right.
at that point,
right.
and we had a very good time together at the commission.
Yeah. And so I think that was the impetus to start changing the regulatory structure and oversight. And I think your appointment as chairman certainly continued that.
Yes. Florio, when he asked me to take over this Casino Control Commission in 1990 as chairman, gave me, I don't want to say a free hand. I didn't have a free
right.
hand. But I knew that I had his support.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what my agenda was.
Right.
And I knew that I had his full support.
Sure.
So I came in 1990 with that agenda, which was to restructure, reorganize the Casino Commission, redefine the regulatory process, cut the budget, streamline the process without compromising any of the integrity and the independence of the regulatory system.
Right.
And the result of it was that we made a 30% reduction in the regulatory cost of governing the industry. We cut down the staffs of both the commission and the Division of Gaming Enforcement. And we didn't sacrifice anything in terms of the standards that we were going to apply.
Right.
And it worked.
Yeah, no question about that. And the regulations, you actually went to the casino operators and asked them, what can we do to improve our relationship?
We did. What we did was, there were, I don't even remember now how many hundreds of pages of regulations.
Right.
But each chapter, if you will, each section of the regulatory system had a different construct. And we sat down first internally with my own staff at the commission. And then we reached out to the Division of Gaming Enforcement, and we reached out to the Casino Association. I'll come up with it in a minute. It's the problem, the color of my hair makes it right, sometimes difficult.
Me too, believe me.
But we met with the leadership of the Casino Association and with the
Tom
Carver, right. Thank you. A fabulous man. And we met with the Division of Gaming Enforcement, and we said, this is what we think we want to do. You tell us what you think we should do, and we'll see where we can get.
Right.
And by and large, I mean, we had a few, before the thing got finished, as you might imagine, there were a couple of dispute points. But we worked out most of them. And as I said, the end product reflected the priorities that we had. The first priority was no compromise in the integrity of the process. We want to streamline it. We might want to make it easier to happen. But everybody has to meet the same standards that they started out with. And we accomplished that.
Were you still at the commission when the first effort to legalize sports betting was done in the early 90s?
Yes.
And how did you handle that?
That was, I'm laughing because part of that process involved my personal relationship with some of the... I served again for 11 years in the legislature.
Right.
And here now, it's 1993, it's 12 years later. And some of the people in the legislature were still people that I had worked with and I had very good relations with. I was very much in favor of the concept of sports betting, but the legislation, the Casino Control Act, didn't permit it. So the first thing that happened was I had an application come to the Casino Commission for a license to do sports betting. Well, I would have loved to have voted for that.
Right.
But the statute didn't allow it.
Yeah.
So we had a hearing on it, a public hearing, and they made their case. And I, you know, with a smile on my face, I said, look, I said, we'll take a vote. I said, and I would be, I'm going to tell you right now. I said, this is public. I said, I would be very happy to do this, but I don't have the power to do this. Mm-hmm. If you want this done, you have to go to the legislature and get them to agree to it.
Right.
And so we voted no. Then they went back to the legislature, which at that time the assembly was controlled by the Republicans, and the speaker was a fellow, a good guy, by the name of Charles Chuck Haitian, whom I had known for many years. And they put the bill in the assembly, and I called Chuck, and I said, Chuck, what's going to happen with this? Is it going to pass? He says, not on your life. You know, for whatever combination of reasons, because it would have required, as I mentioned to you earlier, any change in the gaming laws in New Jersey requires a public referendum.
Right.
Well, Haitian didn't want to put a referendum on the ballot in 1993. All these years later, I'll tell you why. I never said it publicly.
Right.
That was an election year for members of the legislature and the governor.
Right.
In 1993. And Haitian's friends in the assembly did not want to put this question on the ballot in an election year because it was generally known in the political world that when you had a gaming question on the ballot in any given year, it tended to inflate the turnout by some of the people who would vote for gaming who would also vote for Democratic candidates.
Right.
So if we're going to do that, Haitian said, we're not going to do it in 93. And they never passed it. And it never went on the ballot in 93.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are 50 years later. How do you view the experiment of casino gaming in Atlantic City, just for Atlantic City at this point?
You know, there's a lot of different ways to answer that question. The way I start by answering that question is to say, okay, I said, close your eyes for a minute and let's pretend that there was never a 76 referendum, there was never a 77 statute, there was never a Casino Control Act or anything that's happened. What does Atlantic City look like in 2025 if you make that assumption?
Right.
I can't answer that question, but I can promise you that whatever it looks like, it isn't as good as what Atlantic City looks like today and what Atlantic City does for the state of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Atlantic City's economy is a major factor in the economy of the state of New Jersey as a tourism industry. Because tourism was then, is now, one of New Jersey's major economic components.
Right.
So for all of the people who said gaming didn't do what it was supposed to do, I'll say, yeah, that's true. Because we didn't understand, as I said earlier, we didn't understand everything that we needed to understand about how to make it happen. But that doesn't mean that what has happened isn't positive.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all you have to do is look at Asbury Park, look at Wildwood, look at Ocean City, all of which have what they have, and it works very well.
Right.
But it essentially, except for the fact that the process or the product is newer and more modern, it's the same as it existed 50 years ago. Right. Atlantic City is not.
You mentioned Asbury Park. I mean, for years, that city was nothing. I mean, I would go up there thinking it was like Atlantic City, and it's nothing on the toward the boardwalk, and it's just empty. Now, of course, it's in a revival, thank goodness. But
yes,
but that's the way I think Atlantic City would have gone.
Yes, it's hard to imagine what the 50 years since then would have been for Atlantic City without gaming.
Right.
It certainly wouldn't have been as good. You don't have as many people employed. You don't have a 6 year in a row tax stabilization for property owners. You don't have... And let me show you something else. One of the complaints that we heard when the casinos first opened, they opened, and as they were required to do, they built restaurants, they built tourism facilities in the hotels, as they were required to do.
Right.
Well, one of the things that happened is we had a whole lot of complaints from the restaurants in Atlantic City.
Right.
And many of them went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? A number of them didn't.
Right.
A number of the successful restaurants in Atlantic City today were successful restaurants in Atlantic City then, and they have been for the 50 years, because they knew what they were doing. They knew that they had to invest in themselves, they knew they had to market, they knew they had to promote, and they did.
Right.
The Knife and Fork is in better shape today than it was then.
For sure.
Doc's Oyster House is in better shape today than it was then, and there are others not associated with the casino industry. It's a mixed bag. Yes, the casinos did some short-term negative impact on some of the businesses then in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
And the city and the state did not do all of the things in the early years that they're doing now to help the residents and businesses in the city. But they're getting to it now.
Yeah. So let's talk about the casino industry overall. I mean, as you mentioned, until New Jersey passed legalized gaming, the only place you could go is Nevada. And as we talked about the movie Casino, that was the time that was happening in Nevada with all the the mobsters and things.
Or The Godfather. One of the scenes that, when I saw it, I didn't want to laugh out loud.
Right.
I couldn't laugh. But it told me everything. There was the scene near the end of Godfather 1 where Corleone sends somebody to Nevada, and I forget the operator's name, but
Mo something, right?
Yeah, Mo Green.
Yeah.
Mo Green.
Modeled after Mo Dalitz.
Absolutely.
Right.
And the guy walks in, and Mo Green is lying there on this massage table, and he looks up, and he puts his glasses on, and the guy fires a bullet in his eye.
Yeah.
Well, that was Nevada.
Right.
Or at least that was the perception of Nevada at that time.
Right.
And that was, by the way, that was 19. That movie was 72. That was before the casinos were in New Jersey.
So you passed the law here. You prove that gaming can be operated on a legal, legitimate, and transparent basis.
What I like to say all these years later is that we persuaded Main Street and Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
We persuaded the general public as a matter of policy. We persuaded the investment community as a matter of economics that the investing in the casino industry and permitting casinos in your town would not be a problem, would not necessarily be a problem, because we could protect you.
Mm-hmm.
We could protect the investors. We could protect the public interest.
Right.
And we have done that. And the result of that was, and this we didn't predict either. I never even thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody had said to me in 1976, if you do this, there's going to be casinos all over the country,
right.
I would have said, what, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Not only are they all over the country, in Indian facilities and in other states that have authorized it, riverboats,
right.
But literally all over the world. I mean, There were years I would get a phone call when I was at the Casino Commission in the 90s. I remember getting a call from somebody who was representing New Zealand.
Yeah.
We want you to take a look at the proposed law in New Zealand and tell us what you think. Well, guess what? I took a look at it, and paragraph after paragraph of the law in New Zealand was word for word what we had done in the Casino Control Act in New Jersey.
Yeah, and that happened in many jurisdictions. Yes. and countries around the world.
Yes, yes. In Macau and some of the island communities. Mm-hmm. And of course, all over the United States, and even now, you've got New York. New York is going to do something. Yeah. Don't know exactly what. Sure. Or exactly where. Mm-hmm. But it will be modeled more after what we did in New Jersey than what was the case 50 years ago.
Yeah, no question. Well, Steve, congratulations on being in the Hall of Fame to begin with, but also on your effort to spreading the industry all around the world and doing it in a transparent way. I think that's really important.
Well, I appreciate that. I did what I did together with obviously a whole lot of other people. I never did it alone. But we did what we did not for the sake of the casino industry. Right. Or for gaming as. Sure. As itself, but rather to use the casino industry and its power and its merchandising capacity to rebuild Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. That's why we did it.
Right.
I'm happy that we did it. There isn't much that I would change. The one major change that I would have effected if I could have, or if I had known enough to do it, was to focus more attention in the early years on what we needed to do about the ancillary issues, the development of the city, mm-hmm. The neighborhoods and whatnot. We should and could have paid more attention to that then than we did, mm-hmm. And I regret that. But I certainly don't regret the initiative for New Jersey or for Atlantic City. I certainly don't regret what has happened with Atlantic City, and I'm very proud of the fact that here you are, after all of your years that you spent here, being able to see for yourself the difference between the Atlantic City that you saw when you got here.
Right.
And the Atlantic City that you see today.
Great. Well, Steve, thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.